Hey guys, Brian John Spencer here. It's day 9 of the Ireland 32-day project. I'm sitting here with Carrie and Anthony McIntyre, wonderful hosts. We spent last night catching up and chatting. You know, we've interfaced digitally for the last few years, and it's nice to interface on a personal front. I had a wee walk in the Drogheda this morning. Fantastic, just a 10-15 minute dander. Met some interesting people, and we're back having a bit of breakfast, some tea, and as the sun pours in. I just want to ask Carrie first, tell us a little about life in Drogheda for you as a newcomer in over the last few years.
I really like Drogheda. It's really a relaxed town, and it's got the good mix of old and new. There's a lot of immigrants from all over, and it's got the small town feel, because it is a small town, but you have everything that you would want access to in a bigger town. And it's just a real comfortable, chill kind of place to live.
Yeah. And you totally get that vibe. The walk-in was just beautiful, and you see all the people bustling about. There was people of all different colours running around. Then the other thing I want to ask you, we were chatting last night, and you mentioned the contrast between having lived in Belfast for a good many years and then coming down here, and you can see a cultural
contrast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's the cultural aspect of it, and there's the political aspect of it. And when we left Belfast, we had, because of the sale of the house, we'd spent a week in a hotel in Dundalk, and when we were finally got the word to come and we were driving through the countryside, it really felt like leaving East Berlin for the West.
Yeah.
Because of the oppressive nature that you're so used to when you're living in it.
Yeah.
You don't notice it. But it is very oppressive,
mm-hmm.
politically and tense.
Yeah.
And you're just always on guard,
mm-hmm.
when you're living in Belfast. Coming down here, that is just completely, it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the TV as well.
Well, you don't realize the cultural change when you're living in it, but when you're up north and you're watching the BBC and all the commercials are based in British, British,
mm-hmm.
audiences and whatnot, you're really steeped in British culture, no matter what your political perspective.
Even the ones
is.
In North Belfast, or
everybody in the north is influenced,
mm-hmm.
and steeped in British culture.
Yeah.
Simply because of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And because of the way that the economy works, the way,
mm-hmm.
that, the whole thing is, you come down here and the commercials are different,
yeah.
the television's different, the shared culture,
yeah.
is totally different, and you realize how different the two,
yeah.
places
it really
are,
does
really
seep
are.
In a very subtle way without even realizing.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly it's something that I would agree with what you're saying is interesting. Other people may not, but for me that's a good topic of conversation. But I want to turn to Anthony now. Anthony grew up in Belfast, but a good part of it was spent in Longcash as well. Anthony's well known for his writings, controversial, interesting, informative. He's behind Boston College, the tapes, and latterly the controversy. But I want to ask Anthony about life in Drogheda, but from a historical view.
Well, I enjoyed life in Drogheda, and I enjoyed intellectually as well. I found West Belfast a very intellectually stultifying culture, and I found Drogheda culture intellectually stimulating. And I'm editor of the Old Drogheda Society Journal, and because I'm editor of the Old Drogheda Society Journal, I have to edit a huge amount, well, not a huge amount, but a substantial amount of material that deals with the local history, and it's primarily concerned with Drogheda history. And that would bring us into areas like the Boyne. I mean, at times I think I have in my mind sampled every fish that ever swam in the Boyne or was poached or fished out of it by some of the good articles. There's a whole range of historical articles come through, and we publish them every year in a journal. And I also edited a book last year, Aspects of the Raising, which was published by the Old Drogheda Society Journal, and it was we try to bring a new insight onto the 1916 raising by asking everybody that we interviewed to give their perspective on it. So it was I found it very interesting. I enjoyed Drogheda.
And I was in Dundalk recently, and for the first time, we've driven by it many times, and a real sense of being like an old market town.
What is the Drogheda? Was it? It's on the Boyne Valley, so there's a, what, a tidal estuary or an inlet? So is it a trading town? Or what
well, is it is very much a trading town. There's a major port down there, well, a major town port. And I mean, there would be you would still see coming through the town every day an array or convoys of lorries that just mm-hmm. have disembarked from the ships and are coming to distribute their wares throughout the country or throughout the maybe Louth or I don't imagine Dublin because there's such a port facility there too, but they do arrive there, and there's a powerful shipping history in this town. One of the great local historians of the town, Brenton Matthews, has touched on all aspects of that type of history. Very good. Brilliant if you ever get an interview with him at some point.
Thank you for that. Maybe if we look at your story a little bit, do you want to tell us a little bit about maybe growing up in Belfast and how the last few decades were for you and what you've lived through?
Well, I grew up in Belfast, and the point is, the most important point is that I did live through it. Many others didn't live through it. Many of the people that I was with throughout my life died at a very young age. People like Joe Fitzpatrick died at 19, Aileen Dougherty died at 19, killed by loyalist death squads. And then there are people in the hunger strikes, not one of them lived past the age of 30. Joe McDonald was the oldest when he died at 30, the rest were in their 20s. And at the same time, I mean, I was part of an organisation that, in my view, rose up to combat the lack of human rights in many ways, and yet violated so many ourselves in the course of doing so. So I have a very mixed, nuanced view mm-hmm. of the past. I don't feel sorry for myself. I lived through it, and so many didn't.
And with the moment we're living in, coming out of crisis, then the mourning and the funeral, and Arlene and Paisley and Robinson praising McGuinness and giving a sense of hope, almost like 2007, the Chuckle Brothers moment, we could be turning around. But you are a noted sort of critic of Sinn Féin, the Good Friday Agreement, our arrangements with institutions of mandatory coalition. What are the other options? If we hadn't have had 1998 in its current form, what could have happened? Or what should have happened in your view?
Well, there at that time, I was absolutely opposed to it, and I was opposed to it on the grounds that it was described as a Republican victory, and in fact, it was a Republican defeat. I mean, had the SDLP have accepted this and were implementing it, I would have said, well, sir, maybe they've always did this, they have always done this. They didn't kill the amount of people that the Sinn Féin leadership had killed in order to get us this position. I think the alternatives were always to, firstly, democratise republicanism and take it out of the hands of that powerful hierarchy. Secondly, I think that the bottom line should have been, if we're to have a draw, which everybody tries to present the Good Friday Agreement, that's some sort of draw. If there was really a draw, we would have had joint authority with the Dublin and the British governments yes. ruling it. My own view is that this situation in the North, if I was asked tomorrow to vote for a resumption of the IRA's armed campaign or a continuation of power sharing executive, I would vote for a continuation of the power sharing executive. Because I think the IRA campaign failed hopelessly. I feel that I am quite right, quite legitimate, doing nothing wrong to describe the Good Friday Agreement as the failure of republicanism not a success.
And we've got just a minute left exactly. Can you tell us in 30 seconds how you see the next year, 10 years, Northern Ireland? Are we just going to hopelessly sort of bumble along, or is there going to be a radical change?
There won't be a radical change. The future of Northern Ireland will be the future of Northern Ireland. There's not going to be any absorption of the North into the Republic. If a border poll does happen, it will unite the Unionists in a way that they haven't been united in decades.
Yeah.
And so I see no real change there. I think what we have will be the management of sectarianism, and that's what's going to continue. We have it at the moment. Sectarianism's entrenched. We no longer have a sectarian state, but we have a state and a deeply sectarian society, and that's not going to change anytime soon.
Okay, that's fantastic. Very informative. Carrie, I want to say thank you very much for your hospitality, and Anthony, the same, and for the conversation. Very interesting and memorable.
Well, thank you for visiting us.
Thank you, and hopefully I'll get back again. Next up, guys, is Kevin. So that's when you'll see me next.